When the gentlemen of the committee told me that our co-founders were coming down this year, it was a source of great gratification to all of us. But I was cautioned that only one of them was going to speak. I thought that was unusual. Anyway, I inquired about it, and one of the authorities told me that Dr. Bob has come a long way and he wants to enjoy his dinner. If he has to speak, he probably won't enjoy his dinner. But be that as it may, I want to introduce Dr. Bob Smith, and if he cares to say a word, he'll be off to the good.
I see that your program committee has me rated as a non-speaker. And confidentially, folks, I would tell you that's just what I've always thought, too. I feel rather guilty that I hadn't contributed or attempted to contribute something toward the success of your wonderful meetings here today. I feel perhaps I have not been about my work as I should be. I'm not like the man on the recent Fibber McGee program who was asked, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to tend to my Social Security." The other fellow said, "Do you mean you're going to make a payment?" He said, "No, I'm going to get my suspenders fixed." I would be very remiss, my friends, if I didn't take this opportunity to thank you for your kind invitation to Mrs. Smith and myself to come here as your guests, and for the many niceties we've been privileged to enjoy. I have also enjoyed your seemingly inexhaustible battery of excellent speakers, and I'm not unmindful of the fact that you still have one to whom you would like to listen. And if you'll allow me to paraphrase Gracie Allen, I would say he is good to the last word, and that's good too.
Thank you, Dr. Bob. As I indicated, the gentlemen of the committee had long wanted to bring to Weissman speakers enjoying the eminence of those that you have heard and will get here tonight, and especially the man on my left who has devoted his entire sober life, along with Dr. Bob, in developing the program that has meant the difference between life and death to so many of us. Because of the demands on his time, and because he lacks that attribute of duality by which some of the saints were supposed to have been able to be in two places at the same time, Bill Wilson has long made it a rule that he would not address individual group meetings. Just can't get around. They haven't made that kind of a bicycle yet. So the gentlemen of the committee decided that if Bill Wilson and Bob could speak only at regional meetings, we would have a tri-state assembly. So that is the origin of this particular session to us today. I won't attempt to gild the lily. I think I'll just present Bill Wilson.
Indeed, a wondrous spirit rises from this gathering. It envelops all of us. And it's that spirit that speaks. I know it would tell, first of all, of our gratitude for this wholesale miracle which has befallen. It would explain, indeed,
What hath God wrought? No one knows better than Bob and I that there is little we could add at a time like this. He and I sat today in those seminars, and I know we would both say that although we might have come into them feeling able to teach, we stayed to learn. The teachers will become pupils. And since this is a time for gratitude and thanksgiving, on behalf of Bob and Ann, Lois and me, we want to renew our thanks for this marvelous hospitality, for this great privilege of being among you. And when we speak of thanks, we too should remember our friends who are here and those who are near and dear to us. When AA first began, some of us used to think that we stood in a no man's land, with science over here and religion over there. But no more is that true. Some say that this world is neurotic, as it's at its root, the conflict between science and religion. But here, surely, we see men of science and men of religion, and we drunk, seated together in happy amity. In fact, all we have really has come to us through them. In AA, there is really no new thing. Just old things restated and practiced. So AA is a combination of the contributions of our friends and our own experience. And many of us have those who we can call more than friends, people very near and dear, without whom this thing could not have been. And right away, nearly every alcoholic in this place thanks of the wife or husband who has seen him or her through. Ah, yes. Many one of us would have been dead ere now had not someone near and dear seen him through. And sometimes these ones are the forgotten people of AA. In our haste for recovery, and sometimes in pride of our new possession, they are forgotten. But let them not be forgotten. You know, I wish this founder talk in AA could be somehow abated. For AA has many founders. In fact, this place is all loused up with them tonight. But it so happens that a couple of them are real handy. And just to be sure that no one has missed meeting a couple more of these founders, I wish to present Annie Smith and Lloyd. The hour is late. We shall have more talk together tomorrow. So I had thought, in parting, that you might like to join with me in just a few little sketches, little kaleidoscopic things, seemingly little at the time, but terribly significant. I am drunk in Brooklyn, at home.
Someone came to me,
even as someone came to each of you, and he was appointed. And he said, if you will become more honest with yourself, if you will stop this accursed business of living alone and humble yourself to confess to another, if you will go out and clear away the debris of the past and straighten up these sisters' relationships, if you will pray to any God that you know, or even experimentally to a God who may be there, and then if you will give of yourself to others without demand for reward, then I think you may know relief from this deadly obsession. And that was a fundamental message from one alcoholic was transmitted to another, my friend to me. And I, in my turn, tried for months to transmit this story without success. I fear that I was preaching in those days. So now another little sketch. 8 or 9 months later, I stood in a hotel lobby in the town of Akron, Ohio. I had been defeated in a business deal. I had found myself looking in at the bar. It looked awfully attractive. I suddenly realized that I was going to get drunk. And then I remembered. Ah, yes, though there had been no success in working with these other alcoholics, somehow that had given me a relief and had renewed my original experience. Ah, for the first time, I needed another alcoholic as much as he needed me. And I said, I must find one. So I turned to one of our friends, a preacher. His name was Anna Boazer. I guess I picked it out because it was a little odd. His name was Tunks. I said, well, I'll call up Tunks, and he came on the phone affably, and I explained to him that I was a drunk from New York, looking for another drunk to work on. Well, this was rather novel, and his picture of one drunk working on another was perhaps not just what mine was. However, by a strange set of coincidences, as Clem says in quotes, I find myself in the home of a lady in Akron and the other sideboard. I have called many people, and all were busy, but she said she understood. Won't you come out? And she explained, I am not an alcoholic, but I know one who has tried. But failed and failed. Somehow I think you might help him. I said, I'm not so sure, but I know I need help myself. Said she, I will call up Smith and see what about it. So she gets on the phone, does Henrietta, and Sister Ann here on the wire. Henrietta explained, well, he's drunk from New York here, who seems to have got over it, and somehow I think that he can help Bob. Well, Ann said that, well, maybe, but today is Mother's Day, and Bob is sentimental about such things. And he has just come home with a potted plant. And the potted plant is on the table, but he is on the floor, so I don't think we'll come today. However, we will see what we can do about it tomorrow. And then said my friend who understood, who was not an alcoholic at all, won't you come out tomorrow? Oh, would I come out tomorrow? Oh, yes. Till tomorrow comes. And I sit again in her living room. There's a knock on the door. And Ann and Bob come in. And Bob looked very shaky. And for some reason or another, he said he was in an awful hurry. He couldn't stay but just a little while. And Henrietta, being a lady of deep understanding, in fact, I think the theologian would ascribe to her considerable Christian prudence, she put the two drunks in a small room by themselves. And I looked at Smithy, and Smithy looked at me. And this time I was not preaching. I needed him as much as he needed me. And something transpired then and there, the inner mystery of which we shall never know, I think, in this life. And that was the real beginning. You know, the word Akron means, I believe, a city set on a hill. And for me, and for other thousands, indeed, that place is Olympus. Well, a couple of more little words fixed. And he said, you better come over to the house to live for a while. I think Bob needs a little looking at it. I said, yeah, you bet, so do I. So we decided we'd better get to work on some other alcoholics. And so Smithy, being a doctor, calls up the hospital and he gets a hold of the head nurse and says, well, sister, he said, we think we got a new cure for drunks. We'd like to try it on. He said, have you got any customers down there? Yeah, she said, we really got a dandy. He just has been brought in. He's found time to slug a couple of the nurses, but now he's strapped. He's been in this place 6 times in the last 4 months, and never has he been able to get home sober. How would that one go? Well, we said, that'll be fine. We'll be right down. So Doc had him put in a private room. Next day he came to. We appeared, Smithy and I, before the man on the bed. And we told him our story. And the man on the bed didn't brighten up very fast. Not the way they do nowadays. The man on the bed said, I said, there isn't any cure for this. We used the word cure in those days, but that got to be too hot. We dropped it pretty soon. He says, there's no cure for this thing. He said, I tried everything. I don't dare go out of here. I got drunk every time on the way home. I can't understand it. And then we talked about the spiritual side. Oh, he said, don't talk to me about that. I was once a deacon in the church. Well, we did talk. And we explained to him that this was a fatal and progressive malady. That we were a people afflicted by an obsession of the mind that condemns us to drink against our will. And a sensitivity of the body that condemns us to go mad or insane if we keep it up. But that in our belief, God could expel this obsession when we were ready enough and willing enough and humble enough. And with that, we took our leave. And the next day, we came again. And the wife of the man on the bed was there. And she was looking at him. His name was also Bill. And she was saying, Bill, what has come over you? Bill said, I don't know that I can understand it myself. I got thinking about what these fellows told me last night. I got hope. And somehow I feel that everything is all right. Get me my clothes. I can get out of here now.
And that first man out on the bed went into a political play in the town of Akron, and his opponents reviled him as a common drunk. Yes, he did everything the doctors say we can't do. He sat up nights, and he was in and out of the bars, and he kissed babies. He did all the things the politicians do. And then he was defeated in the political race. But under the grace of God, what a winner was that man on the bed. He has not had a drink to this day. And that will be 13 years ago this summer. Well, I came away from Akron a month or two later, and I left Smithy and Bill and a boy by the name of Ernie. And I want all of you to know, the first AA group really started in Akron, Ohio. And it started through the marvelous devotion and persistency and love of my friends, Dr. Bob and Annie. So I came back to New York when Lois was working in the department store, and we began to take Alkies into our house. But our brand of sweetness in life didn't seem to work so well in the house. But a few began to get well outside. And among the very first of those was a man I met in the very hospital where I had made my own recovery. I guess a lot of you Virginians know about that. That's Town Hospital in New York. So I was up there one day with my usual plaint to dear old Doc Stickler, saying, "Doc, haven't you got any drunks to work on? I'm going practically frantic. I'll explode if you don't find me drunk." Well, he said, "An awful nice fellow came in here from down south. He's got one of those real southern names, John Henry Fitzgerald. But he said he's an awful case. Said I'm afraid he's badly damaged. And he's in a terribly hopeless state." Well, Fitz and I had a talk. And he said, "Well, I don't know." He said, "You know, I'm an agnostic. In fact, I'm an atheist. And I was a preacher's son. My father and my sister and my wife, they believe, but I don't. I can't." And we talked, and then I went away. And the next day I came back, and he too had that change of turn that so many of us have seen come, which none can really be. And he said, "You know, Bill, last night after you went away, I fell into despair. And after a while, I dropped onto my knees beside the bed, and I cried out, 'Who am I? Say there is no God.'" And so he became a founder of AA. Why, as for founders, there were at least 20 people without whom this thing couldn't have been. That very doctor in town who let me come back and work. Oh, there were many, many founders, and each of us, have we not become founders, each in his own right, of a new life for the next. Why talk about it? And then we began to see a good deal of fit. And by and by we began to talk about having a book and some literature. And there is here tonight another person, which only other early AAs can remember. The book was produced. We got some publicity. And during the production of the book, this dear girl helped us out. She was not an alcoholic. She often worked without pay.
I suppose that if she and Lois hadn't goaded me, the book would never have got written. You know what damn procrastinators we drunks are. And she became the first Nancy secretary. And she was a person who began to write letters to alcoholics in different places and send that book out to them. And then another miracle transpired. Those people gathered around those books and that letter, those letters from that gal, and they began to get well. At great distances, we used to call them the mail order group. So I like my friend Ruthie, who has since married an AA and is, of course, living happily ever after, and who is a guest at the gathering. Stand up so you can just see who little Ruthie is. Good to see you. Swear. Well, in those early days, I often came to Washington and Fitz came to New York. And I would like to leave just a word about his influence. You know, in those first days, we early ones were pretty aggressive, self-centered people. Fitz was what people today in AA sometimes call those rare birds called spiritual naturals. I suspect that he was made of finer clay than most of us, or any of us. And if I could choose one word which would express this, I would select the word chivalry. Because the word chivalry takes in a lot of territory, just to say. Does it not suggest gentleness? Does it not suggest gentility? Does it not suggest kindness? Does it not suggest forgiveness and tolerance and love? And that is what he gave us in the early days of AA. And if you read that story in the AA book again, our southern friend, that spirit shines out through that chapter. And may I add, because of its influence on those of us who actually were the scriveners for this book, that it is also in text. And he is embodied in that text, as are indeed many people, for I was only the scrivener. Also, many helped us in those days, those critical days, when we were flying blind and nobody could be sure of anything. Yes, there were other males. One is sitting over here, Agnes. Just let me explain, that's Fitz's sister. And she saw what had happened. Well, just confidentially, between you and me, in those days, some of us were awful hungry. There was a terrible lack of dough. And I can never forget that Agnes Mayo stepped forward and helped us out at a very critical time. Maybe without her contribution, we never would have finished the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. She has it back, and with that, our everlasting gratitude. So let us have no more talk of founders. Now we come down to the present moment. Having dwelt happily these minutes in past, I'm sure again we explain what hath God wrought. And now our beloved movement faces its greatest test. That is the test of success. Yes, success is a heady one. A heady one. So now, out of this weller of 10 years' experience of living and working together, Alcoholics Anonymous is casting up a tradition. And that tradition is beginning to tell us that as a movement we should remain forever poor, like those early Franciscans of old time. That movement, that tradition is telling us that as individuals in this movement, we had better never seek for personal prestige or power. That in our relations with the world outside, it will be better if we let our friends recommend it. And may I here pay a tribute to our friends of the press who have brought us these thousands of customers. Thank you, and God bless you. Men of the press. What our destiny shall be, no man may say. And it would be a conceit indeed to suppose that AA would last forever. But you know, after we address ourselves to this problem of unity, the question will someday arise, what is to be left in the center of AA? Shall it be a government, or shall it be a church? Well, already we know that it will be first. We already know that the authority for the movement is the grace of God working through the hearts of the many rather than the inspiration of the few. This too. So, if we will remember that success is a heady wine, observe these simple precepts, I am sure that our future will be secure. Under those conditions, it will not be us that secure our future. It will be God. In moments of imaginative reflection, I sometimes think I see AA as a great cathedral in the building. A cathedral of infinite dimension. And like those cathedrals of graceful lion and stone, perhaps our structure of truthful principles will never be quite the same. There will be changes, alterations perhaps, as we better apprehend the truth for us. But this much we know, that on its great floor where are inscribed our 12 points of recovery, 60 or 70,000 of us now stand in peace and in security. And the side walls which will contain us and guarantee our unity as we better apprehend the truth for us. And then workmen are on the scaffold of the center of service, which may be likened to its fire, and may that fire, may that symbolic thing ever point straight upward toward God.
I'm sure you will all join with me and all AA members everywhere in saying thank God for Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob and the other 18 that he's brought in here. We will close in the AA way as usual. Please rise. Our Father, who art in heaven, Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation. Deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power, glory, forever and ever.